The date is August 9th, 1985, and we're watching Summer Rental. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
And welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the Scully to my Jack Chester.
Arrgh! It's Colin Stewart.
And this week, we decided it's a new year. Let's kick it off with a guest, and so we brought back one of our favorites, the host of the Short Form podcast, Frankfully Honest, Mr. Frank Driscoll. Welcome back, Frank.
Hi, Sean. Hi, Colin. It's great to be back on the show. I will admit I was worried about coming back after all the issues we happened and involving what I still believe higher powers beyond our control. But I did realize something. Something that happened on the first two times we did the show, and not that time. I did not knock on the desk.
Oh, okay.
For good luck. So just so we're clear, and just so we're good, and just so nothing crazy happens anymore involving spirits.
Let's kick it off.
Outstanding. There we go. We've got our go. Yeah. We've got our. We're christened for luck. That's what it's like. Yeah. Yeah, it's like breaking a champagne bottle on the bow of a ship, which couldn't be more fitting this week because we are looking back at August 1985 when the movies in theaters were Weird Science, Follow That Bird, The Hills Have Eyes Part 2, Pee-wee's Big Adventure, and of course, our movie for today, Summer Rental, which earned $24.69 million on a mystery budget. I looked and looked and looked. I tried all the usual, you know, hot spots like Wikipedia and all the different movie tracking sites and everything. I could not find a budget for this movie, so I have no idea how much they spent on this movie, but it earned almost $25 million.
And of course, we are going to be dropping spoilers like cooler water, so if you don't want this movie to be spoiled for you, then please hit pause, go watch it, and then come back and hear what we have to say.
I mean, we're into our 70-episode streak here. Like, we're at 71, I believe this is. And so, I mean, for me to not be able to find a budget on one movie out of 71 that we've done, I think I've still got a pretty good success rate over here. I mean, that shows you how much this was a mystery budget.
Right.
So the tagline that appears on the poster for this movie is, well, I have found three. The first is, John Candy is about to face the most devastating experience known to man, the family vacation.
Yeah, fits.
Okay, yeah. Number two, join John Candy for holiday hilarity. There's obviously a theme here of what they think is going to sell this movie, you know?
if I hadn't seen this movie and only heard that tagline alone, I would have thought it was like a Christmas movie.
A Christmas movie.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah.
Well, finally, the third one, which is the most clever, life is a beach.
Dig it.
Well,
or just that's it.
That's it. Life is a beach. I think it's a play on life's a bitch.
Ah, gotcha. Gotcha. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. But it may not be the best description, so let's go to Colin and do a 60-second synopsis.
Okay, here we go. It's been a long 13 years for air traffic controller Jack Chester, and after a rough morning culminates with a stinking fly on his screen causing him to lose track of a plane, his bosses decide that it's time for Burnout Jack to take some time off. To make the most of his forced vacation, Jack decides to book his family into a beachside resort in Florida. However, he soon finds out that due to a mistaken address, their accommodations are less of a resort and more of a rundown apartment near a public beach access. Shenanigans ensue as Jack runs afoul of numerous local residents, most notably sailing champion Al Pellet. But he does make friends with what appears to be a group of modern pirates. When the owner of the Chester's summer rental dies and leaves it to Al, he demands they be out by the end of the week. With the help of the pirates and his family, Jack captains a ship called the Barnacle and enters the local regatta to challenge Al for sailing glory and the right to stay and finish out his vacation. And that is your 60-second synopsis.
If this movie was today, Alan Tudyk is 100% the Scully character, isn't he?
Yeah, he'd be typecast into that for sure.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, as soon as you said modern day pirates, it's like, wait a minute, haven't I seen him in a couple of different roles where he's been kind of a modern day pirate, like Dodgeball, which ironically has Rip Torn in it as well. Oh, yeah. So yeah, this is one of those movies that for me, Carrie Green, she was one of my 80s movies crushes because of this and because of Goonies, right? She was my redhead crush of the 80s. You know, I've always said on this show, I have a thing for redheads, and she's one of the reasons why. And so this movie is one that I definitely go way back on, and I watched a lot as a kid, but I realized I haven't seen in a long, long time. But boy, oh boy, like the brilliance of John Candy. Colin has always said that he needs to infuse more John Candy in his life. And this is one of those lesser known ones, I feel like. And so this is my New Year's gift to Colin, is the movie Summer Rental. Hopefully he felt the same way about it. Now, I know Colin doesn't really have a history. I want to jump over to Frank first, because when I contacted you, Frank, you had said that you've actually seen this movie in bits and pieces, maybe not fully all the way through, but you do actually have a bit more of a history with this movie than I believe Colin does.
For the most part, yes. I'm a huge John Candy fan. And it all started with my father. My father and his brothers were big fans back in the 80s and 90s, back when he was still alive and making movies. And my mother is also a fan of his, too. It's kind of funny. It's one of the only things my father and mother can agree on in film and comedy, that they both love John Candy. So okay. we, at a very young age, we grew up with most of his films, our favorite being Uncle Buck, as well as The Great Outdoors. And in my opinion, one of his most underrated films, Only the Lonely, when he plays a dramatic role.
Yeah.
But yeah, I have known of this film. In fact, I think the first time I ever heard of it was on an ad for it airing on Nick at Night one time. Okay. And I was a teenager at the time, and I knew John Candy. I never saw that one. And at one time, my father was watching it, and I watched a bit with him. And I'm not going to lie to you. The daughter is named Carrie Green, right? That's the actress.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was about 14 or something when I saw it for the first time. I thought she was hot, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, that's... And there were some parts that I remember from the first time I watched, like them getting into the wrong house and going to the shack.
Yeah, is a timeshare just the Airbnb of the 80s, essentially? I mean... Yeah, I know timeshare still kind of exists, but I mean, that's the vibes I was getting off of these rental houses, though, was like an Airbnb.
Yeah, like, because with a timeshare, it's like you're a part owner.
Yeah.
And then it's like the owner, it seems like my impression of timeshares is like, people go, like, this is my impression of a timeshare, I guess, basically. People go to Mexico or these places, like, one time on vacation, get suckered into owning a timeshare, thinking, like, oh, yeah, for sure, we'll come back and use it regularly.
Because they give you free shit for coming to their presentation.
Yeah. You know? And then they never do, so they just, like, but they need to use the time, so they just keep offering it to their friends and family to see if anybody can use it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I got a free bottle of tequila, I got a free t-shirt, you know.
Nice.
Wow. Free tequila.
For saying no, you know.
But anyway, well, here we
go.
It's
worth it.
Well, what now with Colin, was I right in assuming, though, that you have zero history with this movie?
Yeah, I had literally never heard of this. Like, when you suggested this movie, I thought, for some reason, in my mind's eye, this was the movie. I can't remember who we were talking about. Who did we? We were talking about another movie with Phoebe Cates where she was riding a mechanical horse.
Oh, Kingsley.
And for whatever reason, Gremlins. I was like, oh, that's the movie that Sean is talking about. It's not that movie. I have no idea what this movie was.
Yeah.
But then after watching it, and I didn't even clue in that it was Cary Green, but then doing the research, I was like, oh, and then I remember you talking about this movie back, like, way back when we did
episode one, yeah.
Yeah, because yeah. I think I think this is like one of only three high profile movies or something that she did.
Yeah, I know. She was a flash in the pan because like Goonies was like the same year, I believe. Like, weren't these both 85? This was 85, wasn't it?
Yes, this was 85, yeah.
Yeah, it was 85.
Yeah, so I think both this and Goonies were the same year, so I don't know. Well, let's jump into Summer Rental, directed by Carl Reiner, produced by George Shapiro, who, I mean, he was the guy that produced all of Seinfeld. I mean, George Shapiro is a guy in Hollywood, but that's one where you've definitely seen his name a lot, is Seinfeld, I'd say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's written by Mark Reisman and Jeremy Stevens. And I mean, I love the whole opening. I get a very John Hughes vibe when I watch the opening of this movie. Just the way that it pans across the house and you hear the whole story of like their mourning and all you see is the house, right? But what a fun little bit this was. Like, I just, the comedy of John Candy, you know, like the whole drive to work with the eggs. Like he takes opening two eggs and stretches it out into like his entire commute. You know, the coffee on the way to work, except that he's not allowed to have coffee. What did she end up giving him? Was it tea? I don't know.
Yeah, it was like a green, some sort of herbal tea. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I thought the eggs were super funny just because, I mean, I feel like we've all, like, there is a fine art that I feel like I've probably only mastered in the last 2 years to hard boiling an egg correctly. Yeah. And when he's talking about, oh, like you're supposed to put them in the cold water right away after, that's like something I learned like very late in life, and like would always suffer through peeling eggs and like pulling piece of the egg off with the shell and being annoyed.
See, I am not a hard-boiled egg guy, so I have to admit, I probably can't cook a hard-boiled egg. If I followed the right instructions, I probably could, but yeah, I have no desire to cook hard-boiled eggs, because I'm just, that's one of the few foods I will not eat, is a hard-boiled egg.
And, you know, I always see deviled eggs at parties.
And every time, every single fucking time I see a deviled egg, I'm like, I'm going to give it a go. Because, like, the way that it's all whisked up in the middle with like, some paprika on it and stuff like that, it always looks so tempting and just, it's so inviting. And I always try that deviled egg, and every time I'm like, why did I eat that? I hate hard-boiled eggs. But,
man,
the deviled egg sucks me in every time.
I love deviled eggs. I probably ate, like, eight deviled eggs over like during our Christmas dinner waiting for dinner to be prepared, but they're so good. I love hard-boiled eggs. The trick is that I learned two things. I used to always boil the water and then put the eggs in, but you have to actually put the eggs in the pot with the water and then boil them, and then you boil them for like, well, you wait till it gets to a boil, and then you turn the stove off, and then you wait for the water to simmer, and then you put them in the cold water, and then it's perfection. I don't really know how to do it. Like, some people want to, like, do it where they can make it so the yolk stays soft. I don't really like that, so I've never... That seems like you're just asking for food poisoning to me, but...
I don't know. I mean... For me, if you even give me a potato salad with too much egg piece in it, I can't even handle that. I don't know. I just hard-boiled egg. But I do love the raw one that he smashes on the dashboard and says, yeah. My fault. I didn't specify that it should should have been cooked.
Yeah, good stuff. I also thought, like, when he's in the parking lot and that guy comes and parks so close to him, like, that's a car accident. Those vehicles are touching. But then also, how does he, I don't even think if I rolled down the window I could get out of that situation.
No, that's some impressive physical comedy. Yeah, I was also wondering about the guy that not only... Does that mean that John Candy has left his window open for the day because that's the only way he can get out of the car? But the other guy gets out of his car with the window rolled down. Like, was everyone so trusting in 1985 that you would just park your car for the day with the window rolled down?
Yeah. Maybe. Doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, so these guys, they definitely don't make being an air traffic controller look nearly as exciting as they did in Die Hard 2, did they?
No. I think that this air traffic controller looks more like the real, like what reality is probably more like.
But you'd think they'd have windows at least, right? Like, it seems like they're in like a closed-in room.
Yeah, well, I figured it'd be in the tower, you know.
Yeah,
that's what I thought. But
well, kind of. I actually have a friend who went to school, or I think he just finished, but he went to school to do like air traffic control.
Okay.
And a lot of times, they're like in Alberta, for example. Like they land Calgary flights from Edmonton, and Edmonton flights from Calgary. So like, they're just looking at that radar screen, like landing flights. It's like, it's not like you're looking out the window and be like, okay, like I see you up there, and then to try to like guide it in. It's literally just like a radar screen.
So do you focus more on like specific airlines then? Like, or are you a domestic person versus an international person, or?
Like... I'm not sure. I think they must have like, probably they would have like their specialty in that kind of thing, but I think it's more, they probably have to focus on the radar because that's how you're going to know where planes are relative to each other. Yeah. It's really their job is to just make sure people aren't crashing into themselves. So it almost makes sense that you wouldn't want a window because you wouldn't want people to be tempted to look outside and like take their eyes off the
Start off daydreaming. The
it's funny with the whole air traffic control being part of the film because earlier in the day, my brother and I, well, I've been thinking of getting a new job, and my brother's been looking all over the place, and then he found out how much an air traffic controller makes. He said, you should try that. I was like, you know how stressful that is? And then we watched it. He's in the room when we're watching the movie, and then he sees an air traffic controller. He's like, it's a sign, Frank. Yeah. It's a sign right there. And I'm just like, did you see how stressed he was with the fly? You're going to take 5 weeks off of work. I don't want to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, it would be a pretty... It'd be a pretty stressful job, I think, but no one would have trouble like losing track of your voice. That's for sure. I feel like it'd be very captivating.
I have to tell my brother you said that now. Thank you.
No problem. I was gonna say too, like I don't know. I mean, he lives in a city, I guess, but in Die Hard, it's like that's O'Hare Airport, which is like isn't that one of the most major. Or Dulles Airport, yeah, which is one of the most... Oh, yeah, O'Hare's from Home Alone. Dulles Airport, which is...
It's a pretty big hub. Yeah, it's Washington.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that might explain why it was a lot more insane and, you know, high-profile looking.
Yeah, true. True. Maybe he's just working for, like, a small... Like, when we had our municipal airport.
Yeah, yeah. Before it became a racetrack, and now it's some... Like geothermal futuristic city.
Yeah, something like that.
Wow. Yeah.
So is it like, has this guy really not been on vacation for 13 years though? Because they say like, when's the last time you had a vacation? And he realizes it was his honeymoon. Like, it's just like, really? You don't take any vacation? Like, you know, we've already said air traffic controller is one of the most stressful jobs there is. They say you need to take some vacation time, or is it just that they haven't gone anywhere nice for 13 years?
To me, it sounds like he hasn't gone on vacation for 13 years.
They said they haven't.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. So I think there's a little lag, but it's not that bad. So you go ahead. I'll go ahead.
I think mine got caught actually on my mic because you came in like way after I was done, so you just go ahead with yours.
What was I about to say?
Here, I have another point.
Never mind. Point to make. I'm sorry.
I was gonna say, what was I gonna say now? I was going to say that he. Oh, like being an air traffic controller. It's not like you're a high executive where there would be like a lot of, you know, demands on your time outside of work. So it's like you, even when you're on vacation, it's like you can't escape the office because people always want stuff from you. It's like being an air traffic controller just seems like you go to your job, you do your job, you leave.
Yeah, you come like home and turn it off, yeah.
It doesn't seem like the type of job that would be hard to take a break from or just use your 3 weeks of vacation, to me.
He hasn't been a cop for 13 years where he goes home and the job just goes home with him because he takes files home and everything like that.
Yeah. But, yeah, so that makes it weird. But then I feel like there was this trope in the 80s about family vacations were the worst, and if the father took his family on vacation, then he needed a vacation from his family and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of what the movie is going for, but it doesn't really resonate with the way today's world is.
No, not as much. Not as much. That's for sure. There is a lot of this movie, though, that is definitely like just a time capsule of this period. I mean, you know, even the screens that they use, like the old like green glowing or the old school computer screens, like it's beautiful. Yeah. I definitely also like the headphones that the daughter is always wearing, like the big bulky radio headphone.
Yeah, I kept noticing kind of just like how average looking people were.
Like even the people who are meant to be really attractive all just by today's standards and like today's movies kind of just look like, I don't think there is anyone above us. No, I'll say like the mom and the daughter, even though this seems weird to say, they were both good looking, but like everybody else was like, I don't think there's anyone above a six.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, they're like the thing about the mom is she was definitely attractive, but she was still someone that you could see John Candy landing, right? Like, it wasn't the impossibly hot wife, right? Like,
yeah, I don't know. I kind of thought they had a King of Queens vibe
to me, where I was a little bit like,
mostly like when they're on the beach and she's like sunbathing, and I was like, man, she's like a smoke show. And I was like, how, like, at that point I was like, I don't really buy it.
Okay. Well, I mean, do you buy it more than the neighbor next door showing off her tits and her husband?
Yeah, I mean,
I love that part.
Yeah, I like that part a lot too.
But I know what you mean though, like, cause it's like, even her, it's like, she is flashing her best assets. Other than that, it's like, yeah, she's good enough looking, but she's not like, you know, I don't know, in the 80s, she's not Christie Brinkley out there or something like that, you know, like, yeah.
Yeah.
I just love the fact that the guy was just, you know, he's like, she shot him to you too. Like, oh yeah, my God, stop showing everybody. They're fine.
They're fine, yeah.
When he's like, would you give him a feel for me?
Right.
No, it's definitely a very funny runner. It's like, you know, like even like towards the end where it's like, you know, no, he's a judge. I needed him to judge them.
You know, like what I actually found most interesting about that is like so much credit to the 1980s for not actually showing her boobs.
That's true.
Because today that would have taken up probably 10 minutes of the entire movie is just in those scenes.
Yeah, no, that's true. Like they do a very quick cutaway, and I think that was the only thing that kept it out of like PG-13 rating. But I mean, to the 10-year-old Sean, you know, that was it was still pretty outstanding, because 10-year-old Sean imagination went, you know, all over the place.
10-year-old Sean filled in the blanks below the below the TV.
quite easily. So the sunburn that he gets is absolutely amazing, I have to say.
yeah, I agree with that.
That scene reminded me, I don't know why, but just it seems like it's almost shot the exact same way, but it reminded me of the Kramer butter tan from, or no, Yeah, when Kramer's like is using butter as suntan oil on the oil, and he cooks himself.
Yeah.
Stick a fork in me, Jerry. I'm done.
Love it.
I do want to know with his sunburn though. I mean, like, he gets all into the Noxzema and everything like that. When they're in the wrong house and he's all done up, is he supposed to look like a geisha? Like, is that part of the joke?
That's what I thought.
I
think his cheeks had like a center.
A center where the Noxzema had worn off or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I got out of
it. I didn't even notice that at all. I love that. There is something really poetic as well about the fact that the house that they barged into was a black family's house. I don't know why, that just really stuck out to me.
No, I suppose so, yeah. I mean, and they were like the only real black family or persons of color at all that we saw in the movie, except for the one Paco or whatever his name was at the restaurant. But
yeah. I really thought that family was going to end up coming back into the movie somehow.
It would have been kind of nice that, like, that's the thing is, I do love the moment when they're, like, unpacking to get out of the house. And what a bunch of great stuff going on there. Like, when he spills the kibble, and that's the only time the dog wakes up. But I just even love when the two moms are talking, you know, about the amount of closet space and shit like that. You know, like, it's such a great moment that, you know, it's too bad that the dad is so pissed off. I mean, it feels like an honest mistake. It really does. And they left right away. I mean, you know, you should be able to laugh about it at this point, I would think. But I I definitely like when they leave and then he comes back in and he's like, I forgot my Noxzema, and he goes upstairs and then he comes back down. And my daughter. But, I mean, I've said it a million times. Noxzema. So I think it's time to do a little sponsorship corner. So always on the lookout for product placements and movies. This week's summer rental is brought to you by Ford's and Oldsmobile, U-Haul, 76 Gas, Budweiser and Miller Lite Beers, Coca-Cola, Noxzema, Brand Check Cereal, Nike, the Chicago Blackhawks, and the movies Top Secret and Footloose, plus the fictional companies of The Barnacle and Auntie Franny's Frozen Fish Fingers, aka The Catch of the Day. And this has been Sponsorship Corner. Yeah, the Chicago Blackhawks. Oh, boy. I can't imagine wearing a hockey jersey in the sun. Like, I get having body image issues, but I mean, like, a tank top or something, man. Like, a hockey jersey? Those don't breathe very well in the sun.
Well, seemed to work well for Kevin Smith for, like, until he got skinny. Well, I mean, he still does it even though he's skinny now, but...
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, like the scene of him where he's like trying to find his wife and he's got the cooler and everything. Like, I love how it's just filmed all from the waist down even.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's such great comedy going on there. But then he and I love some of the subtle lines where he's like, oh, you know, if I ruin that, you know, just send the bill to 415 Beach Lane, which is the wrong address.
Yeah. Right.
That actually reminds me of when I was looking at the Wikipedia page and the production notes. They talk about how this movie was like based on a summer holiday that a real person had.
Okay.
And they have a quote here from the real guy. His name was Bernie Brillstein. The story is based on the time he rented a house at the beach in Southern California. And they just have this quote from him that I love where he says, I have 5 children and I weigh 240 pounds. Being heavy in California is not a terrific thing. Being heavy on a beach is worse. The house, he says, the house on the left was occupied by 2 elderly sisters. one of whom had a 6'4" mentally challenged son who was out of arsenic and old lace, which is, I don't know that I've seen that play, but I've heard things.
I know of it, yeah.
Yeah, I know there's a film of it, too.
Yeah. And it says the house on the right was out of Death in Venice, occupied by a chic group of homosexuals who had a 28-inch waist and wore peach sweaters. To Sean's point, I agree that when you're a heavy guy in the heat, it's very unpleasant. Yeah, I can't imagine, like, going on the beach, just being on the beach in a hockey jersey does not seem like my idea of a good time.
No. It's kind of funny, though, how drastically the neighbors change from that original anecdote, though. Because instead, in this case, we get the lifeguards with all their jock straps hanging from the from the clothesline. And then, yeah, we've got, like, the mobster guy next door with the wife that's always showing her boobs. So I definitely also love the party that he accidentally lets happen when he goes next door and leaves his door open.
I didn't understand what I must have missed something both times I watched the movie. I never understood why all of a sudden there was a house party just happening in their house.
Well, it just one thing led to another, because it was the one guy that came, or one woman that came running up to see if her daughter could use the bathroom. She's like, well, no one's answering it. Just go use it. And the other guy's like, hey, do you have any sunscreen? Or he asked for something. And she's like, yeah, sure. Go ahead. Go check it out. Right. So she lets some guy. I don't know. I mean, it's just a batshit series of events. Like,
It was kind of the same when he hurt his leg. I totally missed the point where he talks about, like, when they run into the boat. Where he's like, oh, my knee, I missed that. And then all of a sudden I'm just like, where did this, he just has a cast now for some reason. I was like, was there a deleted scene that was taken out of here or something? But
is that kind of air cast, was that ever actually a thing?
I don't know.
Yeah, I was wondering that.
It didn't really look like it would do anything.
Yeah.
It looked like one of those like German foot cups from Beer Fest.
German That's foot cups.
You know, like the boot? Have you ever watched Beer Fest?
Oh my god, it's been a while.
You know how they have like the drinking competition and the last thing is like they have to drink the full boot and it's like there's a
trick. Oh yeah, and you have to tilt it to make the bubble at the
top. You have to turn it so the bubble goes away and you don't get slammed with beer.
Okay.
That's what his cast reminded me of.
Well, see, I mean, I had it in my head that it was actually something inflatable, and it's like, oh, no, okay, the glasses, and that's what was throwing me off. I'm like, what inflatable foot boot in?
I feel like we need to talk about Al, because I thought he was, even though he has, like, a small part, he was my favorite part of the movie. I thought he was just such a good villain.
Yeah. Richard Crenna is almost always a good villain, though. Like, he always likes to play these kind of characters. But, like, he's the general famously in Rambo is one of the things that he's... But, yeah, he just... I don't know. Yeah, he was a pretty good bad guy. Yeah, he's a fun, interesting guy, I guess.
To your point about being John Hughesian, he reminded me a lot of the principal from The Breakfast Club.
Okay, yeah, I could see that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I definitely like the scene at the restaurant. Like the first time that we get introduced to him. I mean, first of all, what a crazy lineup this restaurant has, right? But I love like just the whole story involving like the lobster slowly disappearing, and then we've got the confrontation at the end there with the my table.
Yeah, I want to use that sometime in real life. And I just love that when he's like, "Is this your wife?" He just shoves his wife, and then I swear to God, I thought it was gonna end with, "Are these your balls?" Because he was like, they really close up when he goes to shorts of him like unzipping his pants.
Yeah,
and I was like, man, is he just gonna like go full out and just be like, "I own this place"?
Yeah. Well, see, and it's kind of funny because I was watching everyone else at the table, and I don't think I think they were all just featured extras. I don't think any of them had a line, because you could really tell how much they were reacting without saying anything. And it's like that is 100% a featured extra. If they say a word, their price goes up, you know? Like, so it's just kind of funny how these people at the table have no impact on anything whatsoever at any other point in the movie, except for this lobster scene.
Yeah, that was probably my favorite scene of the entire movie, I would say.
Yeah. Well, I think more importantly, we have to get to the learning how to sail a boat of it all, you know, and we have to talk a little bit about Scully. Rip Torn, I mean, I know him well from things like Dodgeball, like I mentioned, or Men in Black, but boy, I didn't realize that Rip Torn has been in my life this long. Since my childhood, I never even realized that it was the same guy in those other movies when I grew up. But he's a good pirate. I like all his different hands that he has, all his different hooks, like the shot dispensing one that he has at one point. There was another one that he had at one point too, other than just the hook.
Yeah, I don't remember. I remember the shot one. I remember just his actual claw.
Yeah.
But a much more believable hook hand than in Happy Gilmore, that's for sure.
Yeah. It could have got the wooden prosthetic. That's the word I'm looking for.
Yeah.
I didn't understand why. Well, I mean, I guess he has his restaurant. Maybe like is the pirate shtick part of the restaurant? Do you think?
Yeah, like he's been playing a character too long that now he's just kind of become that character. I don't know, maybe. I mean, yeah, I think a lot of it is just the restaurant itself, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't understand why, like, Jack, why he even thought he could sail. Like, he keeps talking about how he's like, oh, I'm a sailor. Like, I'm going to teach my son to sail.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, like, maybe you, but it's so clear that he doesn't know what he's doing at all.
Well,
did they ever clarify that?
He mentions it as being like he went to camp when he was a kid and learned how to sail there. So it's like, I mean, did you ever do anything at a summer camp where you did it for a couple of years and it's like, oh, yeah, I'm an expert at that, even though you haven't even thought about it for 30 years? Like, I mean, yeah, there must be a thing or two like that.
Unfortunately, I didn't get to go to summer camp.
Oh, you weren't.
I didn't either.
Well, but you were. I know you were a daycare kid, though. So, like, did they ever have any special weeks where you feel like they might have brought in a program to learn something? And it's like, oh yeah, I'm an expert at that.
Well, probably. I remember back in junior high, we didn't have mathletes. We had math. We did this like math magicians. This math magic show.
Okay.
And I learned a bunch of magic tricks that I got pretty good at. And I was just thinking the other day how I don't think I remember any of them.
Yeah. Well, there you go. See, that's the kind of thing. So that's what Jack Chester has done at this point, is he learned his magic show, and 30 years later, he thinks he can do it again. And apparently he doesn't actually know the rules. But I definitely like just the Scully gang that they've got going on. Like Ortho, I think, is what one of the old man, is that what his name was Ortho?
Is that the Asian guy?
Yeah.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
And then the other one, I don't remember his name.
I don't remember.
But then there was Angus. Now, what I don't understand with Angus is when he is tasked with finding them a new sail, and he is running everywhere. Why is he driving everywhere? Why isn't he just on the phone?
It's the 80s, man.
Yeah? He has to drive all over multiple states to try to find a sale.
He's like tracking down leads. And it's like, if you waste time to call when you could have been driving, then you might lose that sale.
Okay. Okay, sure.
Makes perfect sense.
I like the bromance though that forms between Jack and Scully. Like there is this really weird moment where the movie shifts, and like the fact that the wife and the kids are off doing stuff with John Larroquette and he's off doing his own thing with the sailing. Like, it's just like, I don't quite understand why they split the story like that in this case. Like,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that's the one thing that really ultimately doesn't make sense to me throughout this movie is where he goes off and does his soul searching and his family is just hanging out and having a good summer on their own.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The point where, like, the pirates turn from being restaurateurs to, like, almost legitimate pirate sailor types is kind of the point of the movie where I was like, it seems maybe they were writing it as they went along. Because the way the movie starts and it's almost like a Simpsons episode. The way the movie starts and the way it ends is not what I would have predicted.
Yeah.
You know, like it's two different stories. One is like a guy who doesn't want to be on vacation, having to, like, be on vacation, and you would think it would just be, like, that movie is just, like, you know, things keep get happening, and his vacation just sucks and sucks and sucks, and then, you know, he finds some way to make peace with his vacation. Not, yeah. You know, mm-hmm. He meets, like, his pirate Gandalf sailing sensei, and takes down the champion sailor of this local village.
Who he has met for the first time. Like it's not even like a years-long grudge or anything. He's encountering this person for the first time, and it's like, oh, well, I'm going to win your trophy. Yeah, you've got a very solid point there, though, where it's like, yeah, it's two different movies. They needed the first part of it to get to the part of to get them to Florida so they could do the sailing part of it, which is, like you said, exactly how a Simpsons episode would be structured. You just need that reason to get there. Yeah.
Yeah.
The nostalgia is still there for me. I like the movie. And, I mean, you know, with John Candy, like, you don't get much better than John Candy.
No.
Yeah. I mean, by the time they get around to it, like, and, you know, they get the ship, he learns to sail, and the race has started. I don't know why, but I found myself very, like, captivated by that last race, and, like, they did such a good job of thinking, like, oh, you know what, it's just gonna be a moral victory.
Yeah.
And then, through the power of littering the sea, and destroying marine life by throwing a freezer, of all things.
I think there were multiple freezers, actually.
Into the sea, they come to victory, and you're kind of like, wow. I mean, what a ride.
Well, and I mean, luckily, to get to that final sailing battle, you know, we had the fixing the boat montage, because it's an 80s movie. We had to have a montage. Mm-hmm. So. But, you know, like, I love moments in there, too, where she, like, literally paints herself into a corner, and she calls for Jack, and she's like, well, how do I fix it? And he said, I don't know, I did the same thing down here. Like, I love little moments like that, and it's John Candy that pulls that shit off. Good old John Candy.
Frank, you said you're a John Candy guy, right?
Yeah, I grew up with a lot of his movies.
Do you have a favorite John Candy movie, other than clearly Summer Rental must have made it into your top four?
It is now. No, my favorite is Uncle Buck.
Oh, yeah, Uncle Buck, yeah.
Yeah.
It's just so enjoyable. I grew up watching at a very young age was when I was introduced to it. And just, I mean, when you're like 5 or 6 and you see pancakes that big,
yeah,
you want to have that guy as your uncle. I mean, you know.
Yeah, Uncle Buck is one. Maybe we'll have to have you back for it. But it's one of those ones that I haven't watched in a long, long time.
Yeah, it's probably been a while for me too.
I'd say mine is my favorite John Candy movie is Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I also liked, even though I also haven't watched this one in a while, but I really enjoyed Canadian Bacon the first time I watched it.
Yeah, good old Canadian Bacon. Okay, so I've never been a sailor or anything like that, so my sailing knowledge is a little bit rusty. But would throwing that shit overboard like that give them that much of a speed boost?
If there was that much stuff in the freezer.
Yeah.
But really, I don't know.
Like, I would say if they're throwing multiple freezers,
yeah.
Like, a deep freeze itself is a lot of weight. And when you're basically racing on wind power, it's kind of like, that was kind of the weird thing about, like, even trying to think, like, as I was watching this fictional race on a movie.
Yeah.
But I was trying to think of, like, what is the strategy? Because it really can only just come down to seconds. Like, when do you decide to jibe ho, and when do you decide to, like, it's really just comes down to, I think, like, when do you, who's the fastest to put up their sails and all that kind of stuff? Because it's like, once the wind catches it, like, what other power do you really have to control, mm-hmm. other than, I guess, the weight?
Yeah.
So, I mean, to me, the weight thing does make sense in terms of catching up, because it would be lighter, but yeah, would it have been exponentially lighter than all the other ships?
Yeah, because it gets a big speed burst. Like, it's like they just hit their NOS. That's almost like, yeah. Yeah, like they turned on a propeller. That's what it looks like, is, you know, okay, so we dropped this 1,000 pounds worth of freezers out of the side of the boat. Would it be that much of a difference? Same with the pants. Like, when, you know, when he ties his pants up there, I mean, we know that John Candy's a big guy, but is that going to be enough extra air to push them to the finish line?
Well, I mean, the one way they explain it is, like, again, they bring his air traffic control knowledge when he sees the plane.
That's true.
Doing its weird thing. So it's like, he does have that advantage of, like, knowing, oh, I can catch this wind that everybody else isn't seeing to catch up.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe that's when they make the pass, kind of, isn't it?
Well, that's when he tells them to, like, go out to the right or something like that. And they're like, what are you talking about? But that's where he catches the airstream, I think, or something.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the pants was just because Angus makes that one comment of, you know, we need just a couple more yards of sail is what we need.
Yeah. And it's a John Candy movie, and it's like, there has to be some weird, you know, fat guy humor.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess ultimately they didn't, like, make him fall down a whole lot or anything like that, did they?
Uh-huh.
They didn't go overboard on the fat guy humor.
I fully thought that when he tells Scully to grab the wheel, that, and then the way they pan up the boat, it's like from the water up the front, and I thought John Candy was just gonna be there with his hockey jersey on the stern, like full Leonardo DiCaprio, like just capturing the wind.
Oh, that would have been great.
Because I was so confused when he was then back at the wheel until they showed the pants, but that was funny.
Yeah. I really enjoyed when he went to sing his old sea ditty, and it was the Love Boat theme. That was a good moment. Yeah, I thought Scully had some great moments. I mean, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
You definitely have to look to find, as somebody who's only seen Rip Torn in, like, the late 90s and 2000s, I really had to look hard at Scully to see Rip Torn there, because he doesn't look anything like what I know him as.
Yeah.
Which was weird.
Yes.
Yeah. Because his voice hasn't changed much. You know, like, he still sounds awfully similar.
Yeah. And that was also a weird thing, because I was just like, it sounds like Rip Torn's voice. But then I had to think back to all the other movies I saw him in and think, does Rip Torn just sound like a pirate? Is that the thing? Like, I don't know.
Is that his thing? That's the character that he plays.
His name is Rip Torn, so.
Yeah, that's true.
There's something that I just love about movies made in the 80s and early 90s about how they just end so abruptly.
Yeah.
Like, I love that it's the race, and, you know, you get this sweet, like, John Candy glances across and gives him that winning smile of like, I got you, motherfucker, and then passes him. And then it's credits! And then you're just like, like where's the celebration and the champagne and the...
Yeah,
that kind of made me a bit angry, actually. I didn't want to end just there, you know?
Yeah.
There could have been more. Like, it could have been like a Happy Gilmore thing where Al take the trophy or something like that. I don't know. But yeah.
Chasing Shooter McGavin down, yeah.
Yeah, I wanted like the Chariots of Fire music playing, like dun, 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 and just like, you know, them just like the kids just fist pumping and just John Candy gets his kiss. They ride off and like all the pirates are just hanging from the sails.
Well, I like how they worked around the fact that they had a really young girl in the movie, though. Where it's just like, can I just play dollies down here with Ortho? Sure.
There we go.
We can film all these scenes without having to worry about having a kid around. They have the one shot of her, like, doing his hair, saying, do you think we're going to win? And then, like... From what I read, Carrie Green actually did a voiceover for the younger daughter for all of her lines.
Really?
Yeah. So
that's interesting.
Yeah, I don't know why, but yeah, so all the did we win, mommy? That was all Carrie Green, apparently. I don't know. I found that weird. But yeah, it's their easy way of not having the little girl though have to work long hours.
You know, now that I think about it, I think one of her lines was very weirdly dubbed when I saw the film.
Yeah, I think it was the one about, can I play with Ortho?
That was it, yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm.
I don't know. Yeah. I do love the moment of them being in the movie theater and not having money, so the other guy picks up the tab, where it's like, oh my god, if that was today's money, that would be, like, at least $100 that... Mm-hmm. He came in to save them with. That's a generous guy. I'm surprised that they didn't go with any kind of, like, romantic possible story on that end as well.
Yeah.
You think that maybe she felt like she was being neglected, and now the charms of John Larroquette are working on her.
Yeah. They didn't really use John Larroquette that much.
No.
Like, I was kind of wondering, because he's a very recognizable, for whatever reason, I don't even know why, he's very recognizable to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I just assumed, like, maybe he was, like, in the 80s. Like, there was some sort of, is there a connection between him and John Candy?
Well, he was on Night Court at the time. And okay. I believe that maybe it was even John Candy's wife in this movie appeared on Night Court as well. So that might be the connection.
Huh.
I'm not sure. Yeah.
Yeah, because I kind of just saw him, and then again, I was just surprised, similar to that, the family, that he doesn't really like do much.
No.
Else.
No. Yeah. Like, it makes me wonder whether they were expecting to have more scenes with this other family, because like it's also like the idea that with Carrie Green. They kind of had her flirting with the lifeguards in the beginning,
right?
For the one scene, and then she meets this other guy that has headphones on as well, and suddenly he's the love interest for the movie,
right?
But we never get to see him being the love interest in the movie.
Yeah, that was it.
Yeah, they're bopping to Footloose, and that's it.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that lends a lot more credibility to the idea that maybe this movie was supposed to be something different, but maybe there is like a late stage rewrite where they're like, you know what, we don't like where this is going, so we're just gonna switch things up. We need an intense sailing battle.
Because why not?
I was actually surprised to find out that Carl Reiner was the director.
Yeah.
I find it interesting because, you know, right now I'm listening to Mel Brooks' new memoir on audio. And I just finished a chapter with talking about how him and Carl Reiner created the 2,000-year-old man. And I can kind of see little bits of that kind of humor in the movie. Not all the way, but in some cases, yes. And it surprised me to see him at the helm. I mean, I know he's done a lot of big things in comedy and whatnot, but I just didn't think he'd direct a movie like this.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, it's a little formulaic 80s, but it does feel like two different formulaic 80s movies happening simultaneously. Yeah.
Is Carl Reiner in any way related to Happy Days?
I don't think so. Okay. No, I know his son Rob is a director and actor too.
Yeah.
And he was Meathead in All of the Family.
That's right.
Yeah. Right.
So.
Yeah. No. I don't know enough about Carl Reiner, I guess, really to I'd have to go and watch. Did Carl Reiner, like, did he? I've seen All in the Family a little bit, and I can see like a little bit of All in the Family in some of the more like family, like more like the early part of the movie, I guess. Not later on though.
Yeah, but that's Rob Reiner, not Carl Reiner.
Yeah, I was just wondering if Carl Reiner was like, I know he wasn't in All in the Family, but it was a part of it, like he wasn't like a director or writer or anything for that.
I don't know.
Okay. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, let's not speculate too much.
There we go. Let's just write our own history of Carl Reiner's past.
Yeah. That's what Google's for.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, there we go. That is Summer Rental. Now, Colin, Frank, on IMDb, it scored a 6.3 out of 10, has a Metascore of 38. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 17% on the tomato meter. Oh, boy. And an audience rating of 51%. But, Colin, those are just numbers. Like a jib to the head. Hit us with some reviews.
Yeah, reviews for this one were kind of tough because most of the fan reviews are all just very glowing about how John Candy can do no wrong. Nobody has anything really detailed. For a very rare instance, I'm going to refer mostly to critics' reviews because some of them are just so funny that I had a good chuckle. So Michael Lasky from the Bay Area Reporter says, "If nose picking, belching, farting, and vomiting make you laugh, Summer Rental will prove to be a refreshing knee slapper."
Okay. Rick, I don't remember the nose picking gag. When was that?
Yeah, I don't remember. I remember. I very much remember the burp directions, which I was like, wow.
Yeah. Oh, was that guy picking his nose when he was in his bed? Then maybe.
Oh, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Rick Chattenever from the Santa Cruz Sentinel says, "Between the script, which is awful, and the direction, which is lackluster, Candy and the others in front of the cameras don't have much of a chance."
Okay.
Ouch.
Paul Atanasio with the Washington Post says, "Summer Rental is the kind of movie that could make you wish you had poison ivy. At least the scratching would occupy your mind."
Wow.
This is an audience one. Nathan H. says, "Not even a poor man's National Lampoon's Vacation. It is a completely destitute man's vacation. And I consider myself a John Candy fan."
Wow.
And then I threw this last one in for Sean's sake so that somebody came to the defense. Bo P. says, 5 out of 5 stars. "So watching a classic from my childhood, I decided to get some of the backstory from a great family movie. What I found from Rotten Tomatoes reviewers was truly the real story. A bunch of contrived narcissists bemoaning of how terrible everything was 30 years ago with story and cinematography. This movie, as many others, has to be judged with a 1985 lens, not, quote-unquote, how it should have been. Life was much simpler back then, and so were movies. I'm sorry Brad Pitt doesn't ride a CGI horse off a CGI spaceship wearing a nano suit. Feel good, wholesome family movies are hard to come by. have kids and you'll get it.
What movie does he ride a CGI horse off of CGI ship with a nano suit on?
I don't think he does. I just think he was pointing out people's like desire for their love of CGI and the modern.
I want to see that Brad Pitt movie. I'm not gonna lie.
I don't know what the context is around it. I want to see that scene on film.
It's called Inglourious Bastards 2 Space Force.
Oh, okay.
Where they uncryogenically freeze Aldo Rain to fight space Nazis.
Nice. I'm on board. Take my money now. Right on. So,
yeah, like I said, 6.3 and 51 from audiences and 38 and 17 from critics. Let's throw it over to Frank first. Frank, what did you think of Summer Rental? What would you tell the people out there?
I enjoyed it, you know, and now that person, whoever that was, said, look at it in a 1985 lens, that kind of made me like it a bit more, you know, like it's simple, you know, and it's kind of like the cliche, you know, like the 80s movie cliche of a family on vacation and whatnot. Sure, it's repetitive in some ways, but I liked it. You know, everybody does a great job. Rip Torn, I love this Scully. I really got a kick out of him just as much as you guys did. I did not like that it ended so abruptly. But I enjoyed it.
Okay, right on. Colin, what about you? What did you think of Summer Rental?
I really liked it, man. I thought it was a good movie. I couldn't like disagree more with all the critics. Like, yeah, it's kind of like cheap humor, but it's just, I agree with most of the audience in that there's just a charisma that John Candy has that is completely undeniable, and no matter what he's doing, even if it's the simplest thing from like cracking eggs or freaking out about a fly, or even like, we didn't even really talk about it, but the scene where he's with the cooler with his daughter on his shoulders on the beach is like one of the funniest things ever. Like, yeah. And just his reactions, just the fact that he's like, you know, he's trying to justify it, but he's not really like doing anything to stop. He's just kind of being the clumsy dude. I do think the movie is strange in its tone, because it, like we said, it starts as one thing, becomes something else, and then just decides we're done and just ends. Yeah. Ends really quickly. But I still thought it was enjoyable. Like, I'm not saying like I would run out to like watch it, or that I would watch it every year, but if somebody asked me about it, I would say that it was a good movie and it's worth at least one watch.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's not the greatest comedy of all time. It may not even be the greatest John Candy comedy of all time. Like, I don't think it might even be in his top 10, but it is a John Candy comedy, and I'm 100% on board when it comes to it. My mind is still blown by your Simpsons parallel. There's something about that where I'm like, 100%, that's what this is. If this was a Simpsons episode, yes. The first half was getting them there. The second half, because they wanted to do a boat race. And, you know, it does feel like two different movies. But, I mean, it's still John Candy for me. And I had a good time. And I'm glad revisiting it now this many years later. It's just like, oh, yeah. Like, there were definitely some of the jokes that I was not getting when I was younger, and I appreciated all of those much more now this time. But the charm has always been there and is still there, and yeah, I'm glad I revisited it because I did have a good time no matter what. I can see the flaws. I'm not stupid. I can see how flawed this movie is, but it was enough to keep me entertained, and so I appreciate that about this movie. And so there we go. Yeah, it's, I don't deny that it's a 50% movie, but watch it anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's just the comedy of it. Like, it's just, again, I mean you could watch any John Candy movie, I guess, and get a sense of his comedy, but it's like, you always want more, and when always wanting more John Candy, if you've reached the end of John Candy and haven't seen this movie, then watch this one and get some more of his, like, genius.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's all, for the most part, it's very real, mundane situations that he is bringing the comedy to.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. Walking with a cooler where the spigot is broken on it should not be as funny as it was, but it was. No. You know, cracking an egg on your dashboard should not have been as funny as it was, but it was. You know, mm-hmm. And so those moments right there, yeah, great physical comedy, and still holds up.
Yeah.
Well, there we go. That is Summer Rental. Oh boy, a big, huge thank you to our guest, Frank Driscoll. I thought I would bring us a little bit of summer vacation because we are currently in the frozen tundra of January here in Canada, and it sucks. It must be nicer for you down in the Bay Area. But, you know, I was feeling a little summer. That's why I picked this movie this week. Tell everybody where they can find you to listen to more of your dulcet tones.
Well, first of all, I just want to say it is cold here. Just saying. It's not cold as you guys, but it's cold for us.
Okay.
That's all I'm saying. Well, my program is Frankfully Honest. It is a short form program, as you mentioned earlier, Sean. Episodes are pretty short, and I always say, if you don't like it, don't worry, it's going to be over in a few minutes. But yeah, I talk about issues of the day, things I don't like. I like to rant a lot about things. If you like that kind of stuff, you'll like my show. So I have new episodes every Thursday morning at 8 a.m. Eastern Time, 5 a.m. Pacific Time, and you can follow me, or follow the program rather, on Instagram at FrankfullyCast. For show updates and more.
Right on. Well, thank you for joining us, Frank. Always a pleasure. We'll look at you when we're discussing Uncle Buck.
I just learned something. I was gonna tell you how cold it is here, but it turns out it's the same in Fahrenheit. So with the wind chill right now, at night it has recently gotten to like minus 40 degrees Celsius, which is also minus 40 degrees Fahrenheit apparently.
Oh,
which is effing cold. I mean, in Grand Prairie, I think at one point around Christmas it got down to minus 50 degrees Celsius, which was like I think it broke the record for how cold it's been in Alberta for some time. So
goodness.
And wasn't it also like a coldest place in the world or second coldest place in the world? Yeah.
I always loved hearing back in, I think it was 2010, they kept saying that Alberta at certain points was colder than Mars.
Wow.
We're awesome.
Yeah.
If you like that show, one thing you can do to really help us out is, well, tell your friends, share our posts. Word of mouth is so important for a podcast. Or if you want to go above and beyond and give us 5 stars on whatever app it is you listen to your podcasts on, 5 stars and a little review, doesn't matter what you say, but those go so far in helping to drive you up the charts, help you get noticed by new listeners. Or if you want to go even further and become a financial supporter of the show, go over to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne, become part of our Patreon family, become an executive producer of the show, and get a shout out just like executive producer Joshua Blum.
And be sure to check out our website, www.IUsedToLikeThisOne.com. There you can find links to all of our podcast episodes as well as our social media. And if you want to email us, you can do so at IUsedToLikeThisOne@gmail.com. Let us know what movies you used to like, and then maybe you'll find us talking about them on the show.
I Used to Like This One is created by, hosted by, and produced by Sean Wells and Colin Stewart. It is edited by Sean Wells. Music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band Carter in the Capitals anywhere you listen to music. Thank you for listening. And join us next time when we take a look at another movie on I Used to Like This One. Oh, yeah.
Jolly good show, gentlemen.
Here we go.
Frank. Yeah. Always good to have you.
Always good to be here.